Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Mphasis Limited Q2 FY 2022 earnings conference call. Please note, the management will be showcasing a presentation that is available on the webcast link shared in the invite, as well as on the Mphasis website, www.mphasis.com. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Shiv Muttoo from CDR. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Lizanne. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us on Mphasis Q2 FY 2022 results conference call. We have with us today Mr. Nitin Rakesh, CEO, Mr. Manish Dugar, CFO, and Mr. Biju George, Head Investor Relations. Before we begin, I would like to state that some of the statements in today's discussion may be forward-looking in nature and may involve certain risks and uncertainties. A detailed statement in this regard is available on the Q2 FY 2022 results release that has been sent out to all of you earlier. I now invite Nitin to begin the proceedings of this call. Over to you, Nitin.
Thank you, Shiv. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining the call this morning. As we close on the first half of our financial year, in the face of an unprecedented pandemic and personal tragedy, I'm thankful to our employees. They have demonstrated dedication and resilience. As a company, Mphasis has met challenges head-on and powered through a year like no other that made it uniquely challenging. We are witnessing an accelerated recovery in contrast to the economic uncertainty that the world faced at this time last year. Mphasis has emerged as an even stronger company. In the next few slides, I will walk you through what we are seeing in the market and how Mphasis has performed. As the tech landscape fast evolves in the post-COVID world, we see three engines driving sustainable growth for us. The first engine drives growth in global tech spending that has picked up compared to 2020 and is expected to stay at elevated levels vis-à-vis the pre-COVID era. Within that, the overall offshore IT services growth is even higher and continues to drive expansion for the share of Indian IT services market, especially for the firms that have aligned to the digital transformation competencies. According to Gartner, worldwide IT spending is projected to grow at a rate of 8.6% in 2021. The IT services segment is forecast to grow at 9.8% in 2021. The second engine relates to capturing additional discretionary spending opportunities as enterprises migrate away from a CapEx-driven tech investment model, releasing more in the tech budget in year away from the past amortizations due to tech debt reduction. This is spurring the consumption of as-a-service trend, encompassing all aspects of tech consumption, a theme that Mphasis bet on starting 2016-17. In the ongoing dynamic of run versus change, the market for change is growing much faster as enterprises relentlessly rationalize run to fund change. In fact, we estimate that the addressable market for change will significantly expand over the next few years. Because we were able to recognize this trend early, we have aligned our offerings with the change paradigm using our tribes and squad-driven competency model, which we have discussed with you in the past. The third engine deals with the technology teams that are closely aligned with the business and play directly into the growth and transformation theme. Increasingly, a much larger sustainable opportunities are also now emerging within the other parts of the client organization outside of the traditional IT orgs. The blurring of boundaries due to the change dynamic that intersects both business and technology allows us to expand our total addressable market significantly faster than before. Our recently announced acquisition of Blink is a case in point, we believe, of boosting our credentials in digital research, strategy, and design. We will significantly expand our TAM in the faster-growing upstream phases of digital transformation journey of enterprises, moving to the very front of our front-to-back strategy. Our direct business growth is accelerating on a larger revenue base. In second quarter FY 2022, our overall gross revenue was $385.2 million, which represents a growth of 6.1% quarter-over-quarter and 17.6% year-over-year and 6.6% QOQ and 17.2% YOY in constant currency terms. This is quarterly decade high annual growth. Direct business continues to power our growth, growing 9.9% sequentially and 31.5% YOY in constant currency terms. The trajectory of our direct annual growth is consistently rising, with YOY growth topping 30% and about 10% sequentially for the second straight quarter. For first half, direct growth stands at 32% year-over-year in constant currency terms. In absolute terms, our sequential and annual incremental revenue added in our direct business is the highest on record. The contribution of direct at 92% continues to rise. We continue to prioritize our growth and investment in this business. The strong showing here has helped us manage the declines in the DXC business, the contribution of which now is reduced to 6% of revenues. DXC revenue declined 25.5% sequentially and 53.3% YOY in constant currency terms. This is in line with our commentary of DXC dropping to mid-single digit as a percentage of our revenue by the end of the year. Given the overwhelming contribution of direct to our business, which now exceeds 90%, we expect that our overall revenue growth going forward will start to converge with growth in the direct business. Geography-wise, all our markets have fared well. In our core market of the U.S., we grew 27% year-over-year for direct. In Europe, our direct business has grown 44% year-over-year. Our pipeline in Europe is strong, especially with new clients, and we expect this region to continue to be a growth driver for FY22 and beyond as well. From a service line perspective, application services, our largest service offering, grew 39% year-over-year, buoyed by the theme of digitization and cloud power transformation of applications. Specifically, I would like to call out the sustained growth performance in the direct segment. Market share gains of the top 10 clients and beyond have helped us drive growth here. Growth contribution from our key clients has been consistent, reflecting increasing depth of key relationships and share gains. While our top 10 client segment has grown at over 20% in FY22 YTD, what's equally heartening is the consistent growth coming from beyond top 10 customers, including new clients, a theme that we highlighted in earlier calls and will double-click on shortly. We believe that our broad-based success with clients positions us well for industry-leading growth for FY22 on top of industry-leading direct growth in FY21, in line with our FY22 guidance articulated at the start of this year. With our tech-led positioning, we are replicating our performance in our flagship vertical, now renamed to Banking and Financial Services, as well as other verticals. BFS has grown 20% YOY in constant currency for the quarter, representing the fifth straight quarter of 20%+ growth. Our direct BFS grew 13.8% sequentially and 23.8% YOY in dollar terms. This growth is broad-based across subsegments of BFS. We continue to enjoy market share gains with our key BFS clients. This quarter has also seen robust growth in the now renamed TMT vertical and the logistics and transportation vertical within direct, with TMT growing 10.8% sequentially and 168% year-over-year, and logistics and transportation growing 39% year-over-year. Our client stats reflect the strengthening position with several top clients post-vendor consolidation. We continue to believe that our wallet share gains emanate from our competence-driven positioning. As our top clients prioritize and execute their spending plans, our preferred partner status places us well to capture additional market share, especially in new areas of tech spend, as articulated in the earlier part of my remarks. Notably, we continue to see stronger growth for the lower half of our top 10 clients, as well as robust growth beyond our top 10 clients. Our top 5 and top 10 clients have grown consistently, registering 22% and 28% growth respectively in second quarter on a trailing 12-month basis. The average contribution of our top 5 clients exceeds $120 million on a TTM basis. Our top 4 clients are now $100 million plus clients on a trailing 12-month basis. And all our top 5 clients are $75 million plus on a trailing 12-month basis as well. And US dollar $100 million plus on a quarterly annualized basis, which we believe is unique for a company of our size. Clients 6 to 10 have grown at 49% trailing 12 months. This is much higher than the average TTM growth of segment, indicating strong growth diversification among our key clients. Our clients in the 11 to 20 bucket have grown at 14% on a TTM basis as well. Notably, all our 7 $50 million plus clients grew sequentially for the second straight quarter. In a nutshell, our strong client performance across the board supports our industry-leading growth in the direct business. Our new plant revenue continues to grow rapidly as well, growing at 63% YOY in second quarter. We will expand on that segment in a few minutes. We recorded TCV of $241 million in second quarter. This marks the seventh straight quarter of 200 million plus net new TCV. That is not including renewal deals. Our TCV is up 21% year to date. Despite strong TCVs racked up over the last few quarters, our pipeline is still up, suggesting that our pipeline generation engine is firing as well. We generate a high percentage of our TCV through proactive deep pursuits, where win rates are higher than in competitive RFP situations. As we report our TCV on a net new basis, that is excluding renewals, we find the correlation between our direct TCV and revenue growth to be high, exceeding 0.9. Coming to our client metrics, our track record in migrating clients from one revenue bucket to the next continues to be healthy. Specifically, our conversion ratio of clients from one tier to the next tier is solid and improving at well over 50%, representing one of the best rates in the industry. The count of 100 million and 50 million clients at 4 and 7 respectively is stable on a sequential basis and is up by 2 and 3 respectively on a YOY basis. As I mentioned before, on a quarterly run rate basis, we have added one more client to the 100 million plus bucket this quarter. We win one to two large deals on an average every quarter, marked by an increasing deal size. As this slide indicates, the average large deal size on a trailing 12-month basis at $80 million plus is 2.5 times what it was 2 years ago. Our large deals are increasingly multi-year, multi-tower, transformation-based, and longer tenure. The growing size reflects this capability evolution. I'm pleased to report that we have signed our margin philosophy affords us the flexibility to manage our profitability in an environment of rising cost of talent in a heated market. In this quarter, we were able to absorb higher cost of revenue and, in fact, raise gross margins 50 bps sequentially. This allowed us to operate in the stated EBIT margin range. Our reported metric included the M&A-related charges of 208 million rupees, that is 70 bps for the quarter. Adjusted for M&A-related charges, operating profit grew 6% sequentially and 15.4% YOY to Rs. 4,528 million in Q2. Adjusted operating margin declined 10 bps QOQ and 30 bps YOY to 15.8% in Q2. This is in line with our stated operating margin band of 15.5 to 17%. Our adjusted EPS for the quarter at 19.09 grew 19% year over year, and our EPS growth exceeds our operating profit growth. Our cash generation stood at 54 million in Q4 21, a 9-year high. Our operating cash flow generation as a percentage of EBITDA is 77%. Cash flow growth exceeds our profit growth. I'm pleased to report that we have signed 20 Fortune 500 firms since FY20 that are well distributed across verticals. Plus, we've added 10 more in the Fortune 500 category from our acquisition recently. This is not incidental, as we have reinvigorated the program with dedicated leadership. We've carved out 5 specifically selected verticals to focus on our NCAs, namely BFS&I, in which our positioning and track record is already solid. This vertical is large enough for us to continue to provide growth runway in the longer term. Logistics, TMT, and healthcare, each of these 5 verticals has its respective client acquisition strategies led by dedicated sales, delivery, and domain leadership. We have an elaborate operating model in place to transition clients to a strategic status with client engagement structure and investments defined through the phases of transition. As our clients move through transition phase and become strategic clients, we progressively bring full force of our secret sauce and dedicated client resources and GTM motions in engaging with such accounts. Our continued strong growth in TMT over the past few quarters as a result of the NCA investment program is encouraging. Notably, our direct TMT revenue at well over 100 million on a TTM basis is more than double YOY. More importantly, our price-led pipeline addressing the change imperatives of clients' tech programs is up 13% QOQ and 28% YOY, despite pipeline to TCV conversion of 1.2 billion in the trailing 12-month basis. Our pipeline is well distributed amongst our 8 tribes, indicating our traction across various digital tech stacks. In summary, I will leave you with 3 points. Uh, Our direct strong growth is consistent. For the second successive quarter, we've grown 10% sequentially and over 30% year-over-year in constant currency. Financial year to date, direct growth is at 32% in constant currency terms. Direct performance has helped us mitigate the declines in DXC, the contribution of which is now reduced to 6% of revenue in Q2. Second, all our KPIs are moving in the right direction. Namely, our growth is getting broad-based with Europe, DMT, logistics and transportation hitting the growth in addition to our anchor verticals of BFS and anchor geographies US. We continue to drive market share gains with our key clients. Investments in the design and build-out of our NC architecture, a critical leg of our future growth, is bearing fruit, with 20 Fortune 500 client wins in the past few quarters. Thus, we are winning a good share of high-potential clients for the future. Our client mining metrics across revenue buckets continues to strengthen. As referenced, our average top 5 client contribution topped 120 million. Our top 6 to 10 clients are now growing well above our direct revenue growth, with 49% growth on a trailing 12-month basis, while the top 11 to 20 clients have also grown strong double-digit percentages. All our 750 million plus clients have grown sequentially for the second successive quarter. Our cash flow generation as a percentage of EBITDA is nicely trending up, with operating cash flow at 54 million at a 9-year high and represents 77% of our EBITDA. Third, investing for growth by using operating leverage and operating in a sustained target operating margin band. And we believe our margin stand ensures margin stability in an environment of supply headwinds. Thus, revenue growth translates into sustainable EPS and PAT growth and consistently rising free cash flow generation, complemented by improving DSOs. Our growth strategy envisages us making sustained investments in line with our continuity and acceleration theme along four vectors. Geography expansion, leadership breadth and depth, build up of digital capabilities, including M&A and NCA scale-up. Together with the increasingly diversified nature of our client base and metrics, we believe this will help sustain the magnitude and drive consistency of our direct growth. A strong performance in the first half of the year reinforces our confidence in reiterating our guidance for industry-leading growth in direct in FY22 on top of industry-leading performance in FY21. We also expect to see greater convergence of our overall revenue growth with the direct growth. On that note, I would request the operator to open up the line for questions, please.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin with the question and answer session. Anyone wishing to ask a question may please press star and one on your touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Mukul Garg for Motilal Oswal. Please go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking the question. Hi, Nathan. Nathan, I think as always, any commentary on how the interactions with DXC have taken place over last month or two. Now that MRC is over, would you like to update us on exactly how the future of the relationship is going to be?
Mukul, are you referring to the DXC relationship? I can't hear very clearly.
Yeah. I was talking about the after the completion of the MRC, the relationship with DXC.
So I think we've already updated you in the past that we already have three successive two-year terms built into the renewal construct. So we've already kicked off into the first two-year term of renewal. MRC is a construct that was done for a five-year period. I think we have just finished the five-year period of September 30th, and we're engaged, with parties to make sure that we are able to find a situation where both of us can continue to build on the partnership and make sure that we have a sustainable revenue line coming through. So nothing more to call out of that at this point in time, even though it's a commercial discussion. We wouldn't want to talk anything more at this point in time. But when we have something that we need to share, we will definitely update the street.
Sure. And, just to probe a bit more into this relationship, and I know there are definitely some sensitivities which are involved here, but your revenues from the DXC channel has come down by two-thirds in last eight quarters, now down to 25 million. So, is this something where you think you can defend your business given your relationship with clients who you are servicing via DXC, or do you expect this to trend down further from here? And B, is there some direct win which is happening with those clients which were earlier part of DXC channel, given that in some cases like TMT, your direct growth is much better and your DXC business obviously is declining at a very rapid pace. So if you can just help us, are you able to convert some of those guys into direct relationship?
Mukul, I think those are both items that obviously have a bearing on longer term relationships. I think the right thing to think about is that we are investing in building our direct business growth. We've been growing our business, quite well in the direct side, well before the DXC decline started. All we've really done is taken the investment dollars that we could to feed the growth in direct. I think the guidance we gave was to think about the DXC business coming to the mid-single digit mark. I think we are, kind of inching towards that as we expected to. The reality is that the direct business is really where the focus is and will continue to be. But we do expect, a line of revenue that will continue to emerge from the DXC side of the house. I think that's probably the best guidance I can give you at this point in time without getting into the details of, a channel conflict or client confidentiality issue.
Fair enough. Thanks for answering my questions. I'll get back into the queue.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is on the line of Karan Uppal from Phillip Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for the opportunity. Nitin, two questions. First is on the offshore revenue. So offshore revenue has not increased materially for Mphasis as compared to some of our peers. So is that a conscious strategy to chase more on-site business? And if not, can it be a margin lever going ahead? And second question is on Europe. So you are investing in this geography aggressively in last couple of years. So any color on in terms of deal sizes and in which verticals you are seeing traction?
Yeah, I think offshore revenue has actually grown this quarter quite nicely because we have a 1% swing between onshore and offshore revenue. So we guided for the fact that growth will actually be in favor of offshore, and that's what is playing out right now. So I don't think there is any change in stance or strategy from that perspective. Of course, the decline in DXC was a little bit more offshore centric this quarter, so that definitely is showing up in the headcount as well. But primarily, I don't think we expect that our onshore-offshore ratio will move materially. If anything, it will actually be probably a little bit more skewed towards offshore growth. That's kind of, I think, the guidance I can give you. On the Europe question, I think it's fair to assume that our tip of the spear for opening a new market, within Europe or a new geography in that market will always be leading with our strength, and our strength comes from BFSI. And that's kind of the strategy we have deployed in UK in the last 2 years, and we're taking that across the continent over the last two quarters as well. So typically, it's the BFSI segment that is the tip of the spear, whether it is, we have five out of the top 10 European banks as our customers today. We will continue to expand on that footprint. We've gone across from UK into the continent. We have a decent-sized business in insurance in France. We've started doing business with banks in the Nordics. So it's really, I think that's going to be the tip of the spear because that's where our referenceability and our credibility is the highest. In terms of deal sizes, I think we've seen some really healthy deals. We announced the large transaction last quarter as well. So that's kind of the traction and the deal flow is fairly strong in that region.
Okay. Thanks a lot and all the best for the presentation.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vimal Gohil from Union AMC. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. Nitin and team, congratulations for a good quarter. Just two questions from my side. The sharp dip that we've seen in the DXC business over the last few quarters, I'm sure there is a lot of management and employee bandwidth and other resources that have gone behind behind the DXC revenue or our DXC business. How much of that bandwidth or how much of those resources are sort of fungible and could be sort of used effectively to, you know, use for our growth in the direct piece? I just wanted to understand that aspect. And then I have one more balance sheet related question. Thanks.
So I think just to give you, you know, an answer, definitely there is an element of rotation and, you know, fulfillment that comes in through the declines. Of course, we are not, you know, it's not, I'm not saying that we have stopped investing in that segment, because a customer is a customer is a customer, and we will provide the best service and the capability to every customer, including, you know, that channel. However, when there is a decline and we have ramp down, that definitely becomes, you know, a fuel for us to grow the direct business. Just to give you a sense, you know, YTD basis, in the last two quarters, the direct business growth has been, our direct business billable headcount has been growing at 20%. And that number was about 38% for the last four quarters. But if you look at the net headcount add, that will not, you know, add up to that, because we have this internal rotation on, you know, in place. So very much part of the, you know, the supply chain ecosystem for us to be able to reskill or you know, redeploy folks that become available, including manage, you know, at a manager level or a leadership level as well. So I think it's again, we run the, you know, run the company as a portfolio of businesses, and this rotation and migration of talent or deployment of talent across units is not uncommon for us. So this is definitely very much part of the equation.
Right. I have one more question on the balance sheet. Just a clarification. The sharp increase that we are seeing in the other financial liabilities in the balance sheet of 1,400 odd crores, that is related to our payables for the Blink acquisition, right?
No, that's actually the provision for the dividend payout. You know, since the shareholder approval happened on the 29th of September, we needed to provide it in the books. The payout has happened in the first week of October.
Oh, fair enough. Thank you for the clarification and all the very best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nitin Padmanabhan from Investec. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my question. Two questions, actually. One is on the GNA side, if you could just explain how we should think of the increase in cost on GNA, maybe excluding the M&A sort of expenses there on a going forward basis. And two, your thoughts on attrition and which part of the employee base it's sort of hitting, and how we're sort of mitigating anything in terms of fresher hires for the year that you have done so far, and how you're looking at it overall. Thanks.
Hi, Nitin.
Yes, I guess, let me take the second question, Manish, and then you can address the GNA issue.
Yeah.
So, Nitin, the issue on supply side, you know, stress, definitely an industry level issue. The lower down you go in the pyramid, you know, the churn is a little bit higher, primarily because that's where the migration mobility is the highest, especially in an environment where people are working remote. The engagement is also the lowest. So I think the effort is not just, you know, hiring or backfilling, but also taking action for a higher, you know, higher engagement, higher value proposition, and making sure that we are able to provide the same level of growth opportunity across the pyramid. We have been very, proactive in hiring across the pyramid. I think the issue isn't so much just hiring freshers, because that's one part of the equation. I think we've talked about additional supply chain levers in terms of new locations. We've talked about using Talent Next to upskill. We've talked about rotation of people from within, you know, one unit to the next. And we will obviously also continue to hire across the pyramid, including freshers. But I think, we don't disclose numbers, for obvious reasons. But I can assure you that a pretty significant effort continues to be made in, strengthening and broadening the whole supply chain ecosystem. And of course, in making sure that we are able to retain and deploy the best talent we have. But definitely a supply-constrained market. A demand far outstrips supply for the industry as a whole, not just in India, but globally. And we also think that that's an environment that we'll have to sustain in over the next two quarters. But all things being equal, I would rather take an environment with higher growth than supply than the other way around. So I think that's the perspective we are building at new skills and capability. Manish, you can take the G&A question.
Yeah. So, within the G&A expenses, the trend for the last few quarters has been in the range of 5.4-5.5%. Last quarter was actually an aberration when it went down to 4.7. If you take the base as 5.4 and you look at the reported G&A expense for this quarter, that's close to 0.7% increase. And almost all of that is because of the M&A expenses. As we have communicated, the M&A expense is close to 0.7% of the revenue. So if you look at it from that perspective, 5.4 plus 0.7 is the 6.1 that we reported this quarter.
Sure, that's helpful. Just one more follow-up, if I may. From an industry perspective, are you seeing on-site attrition also see a meaningful pickup? Just your thoughts from an industry perspective.
Yeah, I think it's definitely elevated. It is higher than, you know, the historical trends. But I think the real, I would say, bigger uptick really is offshore. Just given the sudden surge in demand that the industry has seen in the last two quarters. So I think, you know, we do believe that the shortage will probably be more acute in certain key locations, because not only is the industry actually hiring more, but there are other ecosystems, you know, from within the economy in India that are also very, you know, aggressively hiring, you know, from the tech market. So I think that demand supply situation is probably a little bit more acute than on-site.
So very helpful. Thank you so much and all the best.
Thank you. The next question is on the line of Sandeep Shah from Equirus Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. Just wanted to understand, Nitin, about the Fortune 500 client addition slide. So that's very impressive. Just wanted to understand, is it broad-based or is it more focused towards BCM as a whole? So if you can give some color on the same.
Sure. You know, maybe we can have that slide up on the webcast. Since I think the key thing to note on this slide is the fact that it's a pretty consistent addition of between, you know, I would say three to four Fortune 500 customers every quarter. It is very broad-based. It is not just in BCM. And the part of the reason for that is that, you know, in BCM, we already have a pretty strong coverage. A lot of the recent additions, I would say, especially in the last four quarters, have actually been in non-BCM. And they're also widespread across geographies, even though U.S. actually, you know, constitutes the bulk of these additions. So, again, very pleased with the fact that we've created a very strong foundation for the client pyramid for us to continue to mine these through in converting them, you know, from the 1 million, 5 million, 25 million, 50 million, 75 million buckets.
Okay. And here, are we replacing the existing incumbent, or is it the addition of one more strategic vendor like you?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. So I think every time there is a pretty significant pivot, or there is a pivot in tech consumption, the pattern of consumption, tech debt reduction, you know, for example, data center services are declining 10% year over year, you know, at an industry level. However, those, you know, there are other things that incumbent providers do. So I think we've also seen that the current environment, especially the last 4 to 6 quarters, I would say post March last year, the ability to actually open new logos, you know, the ability to, the willingness on the client side to actually give you an opportunity if you have the right value proposition, the right referenceability, the right disruptive construct, the ability to actually get them to be more agile and nimble, get them to launch product quicker, cut costs while applying transformation. I think the ability to open these open logos is the right competency. This is a great opportunity, and a window will probably exist for a few quarters for us to be able to go in and expand on our customer base while taking, you know, the referenceability from other customers. In many cases, we are definitely replacing somebody. In many cases, they're adding a new partner because we bring something unique. And of course, over a period of time, as we gain wallet share, we'll definitely eat into somebody else's pie.
Okay. And just last question, in terms of clarification on target of operating margin band of 15.5 to 17, is it also applicable for FY22? Because I believe full quarter consolidation of Blink may keep your margin at the 15% plus or minus for the maybe second half as a whole. So in that scenario, for FY22, we may be close to 15-15.5% kind of a margin.
So Sandeep, you know, when we made the announcement of the acquisition, we talked about the fact that this transaction could have a potential impact of up to 1% for the first 8 quarters. However, as the scale-up happens, as we are able to get the synergy benefits, some of those impacts would get normalized. So, you know, you would have seen that this quarter, the impact is 0.7%. And, you know, we will work towards making sure that, you know, we anchorage the synergy. So, worst case scenario, you are right that it will probably have an impact, but the range on operating basis continues to be 15.5 to 17 for the current year. When we get to the quarter one of next year, we will, you know, talk about what we believe would be the range for the future year. Having said that, the principle and the philosophy that we have articulated earlier, that we will maintain margins in a narrow range with a northward bias while investing for growth, should continue. And hence, on an operating basis, you should look at the EBIT margins to be, you know, northward bias.
So Manish, just so on a reported basis, this band is even applicable for FY22 as a whole?
For the current year, yes.
Okay, okay. Thanks and all the best.
Yeah.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Apurva Prasad from Elara Capital. Please go ahead.
Thanks for taking my question and congrats on the numbers. Nitin, any early indications on tech budgets for 22 and your comments on the large deal pipeline?
Apurva, I think it's a little bit early in the cycle, but we do believe that the year will finish with a flourish from a tech spend perspective, just as we've seen in the last two quarters. And we don't think that there are many choices for enterprises to actually cut back on tech spending. That's on the, I would say, the traditional way of thinking around, you know, discretionary budget versus non-discretionary budgets. However, the key thing to note is the two remarks I called out earlier. One, I think as this dynamic of CapEx versus OpEx gathers pace, as more applications move to the cloud, as more data centers get retired, as more applications get rationalized, you will actually see, you know, some sort of a suction effect where in-year spending capability will actually be will be higher than what it used to be in the past years. So that's kind of the I would say in a way that will release a lot of tech spend capability for in-year spend much more than what it used to be. Second trend you have to keep in mind that I also called out earlier was the fact that almost every part of the value chain in every enterprise's businesses is getting digitized, from contact center to customer service to marketing, product development. Almost everything is going through a very massive, you know, digitization through buildup of software or platforms or data. Those are areas of spend that traditionally were not seen in the tech budgets, but have started to kind of creep up. And, you know, the marketing spend is now 70%, you know, digital marketing. And hence, there is a pretty significant software effort that is being done there to actually make it smart and so on. So I think those two trends will actually keep spending and the target market for us actually fairly elevated, even if the traditional spending kind of tapers off after a big boost in 2021. So that's on the budget. Hopefully that gives you more clarity. We'll get a better sense over the next couple of months as we get into the end of the year. On the large deal pipeline, I think by definition, large deals are lumpy. We call that our last quarter, but I think we are quite pleased with the fact that our pipeline for new gen deals is up 28% year over year. And I think that's the chart that we have in the deck as well. And that should give you a little bit of a sense, you know, on slide 11 of the deck. The fact that it's fairly broad-based, it's across multiple tribes. It is not led by any one or two service lines. So I think the ability to construct opportunities, be proactive, use, you know, the tribe and squad competency model to actually generate early engagement-led large deals is still very much in there. And the fact that despite having converted $1.8 billion in net new TCV in the last six quarters, you know, we are still actually running a pipeline that is 27-28% higher than this time last year.
That's useful. My other question was on increased revenue productivity, this is despite the bigger offshore shift. So is that really mix change from DXC to direct or perhaps higher growth in DR? What's really driving this?
I think some of it is, of course, the, you know, when we do a large term transformation deal, you know, we call this out two quarters in a row that, you know, the early part of the deal will probably have some element of lift and shift. Then you'll start optimizing it, then you'll start transforming it. So that's kind of what shows up in some of this revenue, you know, efficiency. Of course, the levers that we have on the managed services side of the business, the ability to actually grow revenue faster than headcount, all of that is part of the mix, and of course, there is a pricing element to that as well.
Right. And just finally, on infra services, which seems to be a bit volatile over the past two quarters. I mean, again, is that DXC mix or you know, from a going forward perspective, do you see more integrated deals and therefore more steady state between apps and infra?
Yeah, if you look at the headline infra number, of course, you know, that looks very muted. But if you strip out the DXC impact, I think the infra business has actually grown very healthy. You know, if you go back again to the deck of slides that we talked about, the infra business for our direct, the infra ITO piece for our direct business has actually, you know, grown at 46% YOY. So I think it's the impact of the volatility of the DXC, you know, book of business that is creating a headline volatility. But overall, the integrated deal thesis is very much alive.
Thank you and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Dipesh Mehta from Emkay Global. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. A couple of questions. First, about the seasonality. How do you expect meeting seasonality to play out in Q3? Do you expect furloughs and holiday kind of thing likely to have implication for Q3, or you believe underlying demand trend will be good enough to have sustained growth even continuing in Q3? Second question is on insurance. Now, we are seeing weakness in insurance revenue and margin both. So if you can provide some perspective, how you expect insurance to play out for us over next few quarters? Third question is about the DXC. I think you indicated we will be closer to mid-single digit by year-end. We are broadly there. So do you expect now relatively stable performance in DXC? Thank you.
So I think let me take the first question. I have to just remember the three questions that you asked me. The first was on the seasonality. The demand environment is pretty stable, but there will always be seasonality impact given the calendar fourth quarter, you know, whether it's billable hours, number of holidays, and in some cases, there are certain client furloughs. Too early to call on the furloughs, but the fact that we are still calling for significant growth in the second half of the year purely based on the trends and the fact that we think our direct business growth will be able to sustain market-leading growth rate should give you a sense that we do expect the growth, the demand environment to be tailwinded. On insurance, I think, there is obviously, certain deal conversion, TCV to deal conversion activity that is causing a temporary dip in margin. We do believe that we've actually got a pretty decent order book right now, not just pipeline, but order book in that business. And you will, you know, you should certainly see sequential growth continue to pick up. On a YY basis, it's already performing well, given just the way we built that pipeline and TCV book in that business. And thirdly, on DXC, I think the question of DXC, you know, stabilizing around a certain percentage of revenue is very much a reflection also of how much we continue to grow the direct business and at what rate that grows. So I think we are in the zip code, but we probably have, I think the ability to continue to grow direct is something that will have a bearing on what, you know, where it stacks in the order rank. It's not in the top five today. It was obviously the largest 6 quarters ago. So that gives me confidence, you know, as a matter of fact, that we have the ability to now start converging the growth rates between direct and overall company. Of course, we do expect stability, in that channel as well. But I think the question really is how much can we keep feeding the direct growth?
Understand. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Rahul Jain from Dolat Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the opportunity. Just one question, which is TCV signings have been robust on a TTM basis, but not so strong in the quarter, which has also been the case in many more peers. So is there any specific reason that you could identify here in terms of some small shift of spend towards physical side for some client instead of spending more and more toward building digital channel? That's some kind of trend you're witnessing.
I think, again, if you look at slide 11, you know, we are actually pretty pleased with the fact that we have a pretty strong pipeline that continues to give us, you know, both sequentially, we've actually added 13% in the pipe and YOY about 27-28% in the pipe. So I don't think there is anything to call out. This is definitely the lumpiness of the large deal that is giving you the sense. But I think on a sustained basis, we are well within the, you know, the 225 to 250 mark that we've called out for now the successive seventh quarter. We haven't seen any other shift or trend in spend. What we definitely have seen, though, is the fact that there is a certain sense of urgency with many of our clients where instead of waiting to construct a two-year or a three-year transformation deal, they're happy to construct a six-month, nine-month, you know, kind of a post-sprint deal and hand it out so they can get started versus taking that additional three-month time to go through the you know, process and negotiation and all of that. So I think that sense of urgency and the fact that they are looking for agility and the fact that they want, you know, needle movement to happen much faster is definitely creating, you know, multiple smaller deals, but they're also giving more, there is also much more in-year revenue growth possibility with some of those deals, while, of course, we continue to see large deals with longer tenure as well. But that's definitely a trend that I've seen emerging in the last 3 months or so, where instead of, you know, doing the whole transformation bundle as an SOW, they're actually breaking it down into three or four different phases.
Right. So just, in a way, can we say that the same orders can now be consumed much faster? That's the clarification. And also just one remark, that since we have this direct business now more than 90% of revenue, do we see any specific need for looking at the business into three pieces, direct, DSC, others, rather than looking the other two just as the client or deals, rather than looking them as a separate segment per se?
Sure. I think the answer to your first question is definitely there is faster TCV to revenue conversion. So in a way, the ABR or the ACV uplift is very quick, and that's why you've seen in the last two quarters the growth has stacked up, you know, to 30%+. We expect that trend to continue at least for the remainder of this financial year. I think as we get into the next year, we get a little more clarity on the budgets. And, of course, the timelines, I think we'll get a better sense of whether this trend will continue. But this is being borne out by, you know, many of our industry analysts who we've spoken to as well. And I think this is very much something that you should think about as you construct your models in terms of, you know, the conversion of TCV to immediate revenue. Second, I think on the segment breakup, I think it's a secondary segment for us. This is not the primary segment. So at some point we may decide that it doesn't make sense for us to report it out separately. But for now, from a transparency standpoint and continuity of visibility standpoint, we're still breaking it out. Our primary segments continue to be the vertical breakdown that we give you.
Okay, thank you. That's it from my side.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Mohit Jain from Anand Rathi. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. One was on Blink. Have you guys already integrated it for 10 days in the quarter?
Actually, we announced the transaction only on the 21st of September, so 22nd of September. So I think there wasn't much to integrate from an operating standpoint. Of course, the financial reporting will include that 9 days of reporting. If I'm not mistaken, but from an overall business integration perspective, I think this is a well thought through execution that we are undertaking right now. You know, we want to nurture the current business and the current client base, and of course find ways to synergize both for our customers and more importantly to also, you know, take those logos that we've acquired through Blink and convert them to, you know, broader emphasis competency areas as well. So I think that integration will play out over the next two quarters. And we have a very strong, a strong focus and plan in execution right now.
But from a financial perspective, it was only 9 days. And for the current quarter, which is Q3, we will see full integration of financials.
Right. So Manish sir, how much was the contribution in this quarter?
Mohit couldn't hear you. Could you repeat that?
Please? How much was the financial contribution for 2Q FY22?
So the total Blink revenue that we got in the quarter is $900,000, and the costs have already been called out to the extent they are M&A related. Otherwise, the P&L has got consolidated and the balance sheet has been consolidated with the quarter end.
Right. So the second question was related to the adjustments that you have shown in the release. When you say adjusted for M&A, are these one-time expenses, that 0.7% that you are referring to, is it like one-time to 2Q22? Or is it because Blink got integrated, so you got some cost and this gives you the true picture of margin of the control entity?
No, like we discussed when we made the announcement for the transaction, there are charges that come in, you know, which are upfront. For example, advisory cost, the cost that you incur for due diligence, etc., which are one time, and those are not going to recur going forward. But at the same time, there is a certain portion of the goodwill that gets classified as intangibles, which gets amortized every quarter. And
Right. Then
there are some costs which are linked to retention of employees. So, you know, there is a retention bonus which gets paid out as an account. A combination of those two, we called out, may have an impact of up to 1% for 8 quarters. And as the synergy benefits come in and as revenue scale up happens, it will keep getting lower and lower. So the 9-day equivalent of that would have come in the quarter, and the balance would be all one time.
So that 0.7%, we should consider it as one time and then see how the overall number pans out for Q3, right?
So there would be some impact of that point for the 9-day cost of retention and amortization, which will come for the full quarter going forward. So
okay.
0.7 will, you know, the other costs which were there in the 0.7 will go away, but some of the other, this point, 9-day costs will go up to the whole 90 days for the quarter.
Understood. And the last thing on the outlook that you have given, 15.5 to 17, that is on organic emphasis basis. And as per the previous con call, we should continue to assume that on console, you will operate at 14.5 to 16% kind of a margin range, right?
I would say we are continuing with the operating guideline of 15.5 to 17%. And the impact of M&A, we will keep working on it and keep reducing it. Till that point in time, we will give a separate disclosure of how much that cost is.
But in the second half, we should assume that you will be in the target band of 15.5 to 17.
Yes, from an operating perspective.
Including Blink. Okay, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vibhor Singhal from PhillipCapital. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, sir. Thanks for taking my question. So, Nitin, just one question from my side on the overall margin direction that we are looking at. So, just wanted to get your perspective on exactly, if I exclude all the exceptional items and all, what is the kind of margin trajectory that we're looking for the company, either in the near or medium term future? I mean, last year we saw many of our peers having the benefit of lower travel expenses and marketing costs. We decided to basically use that for investment into our business growth. This year, again, we've seen in this quarter, most of the companies reported very strong growth, and that operating leverage helped them expand margin. But none of that seems to be happening with us. Most of our mid-cap companies or listed or comparable peers are now reporting EBIT margins in the 17-18% kind of a range. So will we basically continue to build this kind of stick to this kind of a range of 15.5 to 17% kind of range that we called out, more towards, looks like more towards the lower end in terms of growth? Or do you think there is an uptick at some point of time that could play out in the numbers as well?
So I think philosophically, we've actually been pretty consistent in maintaining the operating EBIT, you know, in the band that we've talked about. We have probably the most stable margins with the least volatility, while the fastest growing, direct revenue line. Even in FY21, we actually grew the direct business in mid double digits, when many of our peers actually barely grew, you know, in single digits. So I think the focus on growth, the ability to actually prioritize growth above all else,
required us to take some of that operating leverage that we are generating and investing it back into the business, and that's what we've been doing. I think there are many puts and takes as some of those expenses have come back. We've started to obviously balance out other investments, and we'll continue to do that. But I think at this point in time, it's fair to assume that our guidance band for the margin will be that we will keep margin stable while prioritizing growth. And hence, we are very confidently, you know, focusing on the market-leading growth of the direct business.
Right. So, I mean, just one small follow-up to that. The kind of strong growth that we reported in this quarter, almost 10% Q1Q for the direct core business, shouldn't that have led to some operating leverage coming to the numbers, even taking into account the acquisition and M&A costs, even taking into account the investments that we've put back into the businesses?
Yes, and that's why if you see the gross margin is actually up by about 40 bits this quarter. But we've taken a lot of the investment back into the business, and I think, again, that is the operating leverage that I was talking about, right? So if you look at sequentially, gross margin has expanded, which means we are able to actually generate efficiencies despite a very tight labor market. I think, you know, I would personally like to see a little bit more stability on the supply side before we can start thinking about, you know, expansion in the margin. I think we have said in the past that we have the ability and we have the visibility to an upward bias in the operating margin. But at what point to take it into the P&L versus investing it for growth or making sure that we are able to feed the growth so it doesn't start hurting that is really the question that we need, the debate that we have almost every day internally. And right now, I think our stance is what I articulated to you.
Got it. Thanks a lot. Thanks for bringing my questions and wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ashish Agarwal from Principal India. Please go ahead.
Sir, most of my questions have been answered. Just wanted to understand. So, when you said there are a lot of short cycle deals, and this is likely to continue for another 2 quarters at least, so that should now support the growth in a seasonally weak quarters. Am I right? That's where your commentary is suggesting.
Yes, and that's why we are still calling out for, I would say, pretty tailwinded growth environment for the next 2 quarters.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ronak Vora from OHM Advisors. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Yes.
Sir, can you please highlight on the attrition number?
We don't disclose that number publicly, and I think we're going to keep to that stance.
Okay, so if you can just give a sense on the whole supply chain and how are we seeing in terms of new hiring, in terms of pressure, you know, just give a sense about it.
Yeah, I think I addressed that earlier on, that we are probably, we have been very proactive in creating new levers of supply chain, including geography expansion. I think we've talked about, I think 2 quarters ago, we gave a full description of the fact that we now added some centers in Taiwan, Costa Rica, Mexico. We announced something in Canada that we are now building out. We've talked about a new addition of a center in UK as well as recently in Dusseldorf in Germany. So that's one part of the expansion. Second part of the expansion is the fact that we are hiring across the pyramid. Yes, we have a pretty robust trainee intake program. We also have a very robust reskilling program using Talent Next. So I think the ability to add talent, while it's a constrained environment, but I think the fact that we are able to showcase the growth rate that we are showcasing means that we have the ability to make sure we are able to overcome the supply issues. Of course, that also requires investment, and that goes back to the point I was making on the previous question, that in the current environment, the reason why we are still focused on prioritizing growth and holding the margin is because all of this work that we are doing on the supply side also requires investment.
Okay. And secondly, on the demand front, so currently, are we to assume that, DXC will be maintained at the same level of revenues going ahead and our direct business should continue at the same pace of growth or much faster going ahead?
Yeah, I think that's a difficult question for me to answer because you're asking for specific guidance for specific segments. I think I will just stay with the fact that
the BHC business will, you know, will continue to trend towards mid-single digit, and the rest business will continue to grow at market-leading growth rates.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Abhishek Shindadkar from InCred Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the opportunity and congrats on a great execution. Three quick questions, if I may. First is, any color on the initial conversations on joint go-to-market and cross-selling services with Blink? The second one is, how should we reconcile the 6% quarter-on-quarter decline in TMT revenue and a 600 basis points improvement in gross margins? Any color would be helpful. And the third is, what is the target, for utilization ex-trainee? And, you know, is that a lever for margins? Thank you for taking my questions.
I think it's too early to give you color on the Blink integration. It's only been 30 days today. We will potentially give you more update in the next call. But, you know, fair to say that we are very carefully and thoughtfully actually executing an integration plan that provides them a level of independence while giving us the ability to cross-leverage. So we'll give you more color. Good progress in early first 30 days as per plan. On TMT, I think we've broken out TMT growth by direct versus, you know, consolidated. The decline that you're seeing really is coming out of that issue. And I think the large deals that we've had in that segment in the direct side are now starting to, of course, turn you know, a corner, and that's why you're seeing expansion in margin there as well. And I forgot what your third question was.
So Nitin, the last question was on the target gross margin. Just to add to what Nitin said, Abhishek, the TMT decline, you know, is also reflected in the reduction in rest of the world, and both of them are BXC revenue decline. And as we have talked about earlier, those, in addition to the offshore revenue improvement, gives us gross margin tailwinds, which has led to the 0.5% expansion in gross margin. And we work towards the EBIT margin range of 15.5 to 17. We don't work towards a targeted margin percentage, to speak.
Okay, if I can just do a follow-up. The last question was on utilization. And, you know, I completely understand the decline in the TMT business is coming from BXC. But what I'm trying to understand is that, you know, this significant contribution to gross margin. So, you know, in the remaining 6% of BXC, is that another lever for margins?
So BXC business, in general.
Yeah, I think the right way to think about it is that we've obviously always called out for the fact that the BXC business is actually margin dilutive. It's not the most profitable part of the business. So it's a combination of the two dynamics. The fact that we are growing, if you look at the TMT business, X, BXC, I think it has grown, the high tech component has grown, you know, at 100%+, and combined with the fact that we are actually declining business that is not profitable. So I think it's a combination of both those things. On the utilization front, I don't think we want to give a guidance on the band, but I think we feel quite comfortable with the current level of utilization that gives us enough flexibility and room to maneuver for growth. And I think as we onboard, you know, as we continue to work on the pyramid, we may have, you know, some movement up and down, but I don't think you should expect major shifts in the utilization stance.
That's very helpful. Thank you for taking my question and best wishes for 22.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is on the line of Manik from JM Financial. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity. Nitin, I wanted to get thoughts on a couple of things. Number one thing is that we have seen the on-site offshore mix move in favor of offshore delivery in the last few quarters. But in your case, the mix change essentially has been much lesser than what we've seen for the peers. So is that also being driven by the decline in the DXC business? That's question number one. And second thing is that given the sharp decline on the DXC side and given the restructuring or the reorientation from a delivery side that would entail, is that also impacting our margins over the last few quarters? Thank you.
So Manik, I think the shift in offshore is very much, I think there is tailwind towards offshore. We will see that mix shift continuously. I can't comment on peers, but I think for us, this is a reflection of how those large deals get executed, how they get rationalized, how they get normalized. I think we'll continue to have some movement up and down, but I think broadly the tailwind for offshore is definitely there in the business. On supply chain, you know, yes, you picked up a good point. You know, it is not always feasible to have a one-to-one match, especially when you have significant movement and people coming on the bench. So, and you need to reskill them. So that's definitely something that is a headwind or has been a headwind for the last three or four quarters on our business as we've tried to manage the decline in one part of the business and redeployment in the other side of the business. So the both of them are actually puts and takes that we have to balance on a quarterly basis.
Any sense on how much would that have been a drag from a margin standpoint over the last 18-24 months?
I don't know if I want to call it out. Manish, do you think we have a delta number that we can give, or we just leave it at the overall level?
No, Nitin, I think, you know, it is like we have mentioned earlier, these are takes of business and we work with a range of margin 15.5 to 17. So whatever upsides we have to consume for managing this, we have. But the good news is most of the supply constraints because of the DFC ramp down has been used for growth in the direct side. Although it ends up becoming additional questions on why the headcount growth is not reflecting in the revenue growth, but you know, we would not call that out separately in terms of the impact of that on the margin.
Sure. Thank you and all the best for the future.
Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vivek Guntupalli from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, Nitin. Thanks for taking my question. Just from industry perspective, I'd like to take from you. So most of the companies are essentially talking about demand that can last for several years to come by. A precursor to that sort of a visibility should have been a higher share of large and mega deals, which might be spanning over several years. But that has clearly not been the case. Over the last several quarters, if we see, we have not really seen very large deals or mega deals, barring the cases of some captive takeovers, so on and so forth. So how do we reconcile this paradox as to if we are talking about multi-year demand visibility and we are seeing a bigger share of small and medium-sized deals in the mix, what essentially is giving that sort of a longer tenure visibility?
So I think the way to think about it is, I think what you're trying to do is you're trying to apply Horizon 1 business model thinking to the digital transformation, you know, wave underplay. That's not going to fit. Your paradox doesn't come from visibility. Your paradox is coming from the ability to actually look at annuity revenue, because that's what should give you revenue, you know, revenue certainty. That is not going to happen in the current environment, because the whole dynamic of moving away from run the business means that you are going to find harder and harder to construct 10-year deals, 7-year deals, 8-year deals that give you the ability to actually run those applications or infrastructure assets. The fact that we are looking at short cycle, quick burst projects is very much aligned to the fact that while there is a lot of spending that is happening in digital dev, platform build, application transformation, cloud adoption, not necessarily you will see, by definition, those cannot be constructed as 5-year projects, because that's a waterfall way of thinking. So I think it's a little bit of the apples and oranges comparison that you're trying to do from a modeling perspective. My recommendation would be to start thinking about how much of the spend expansion has happened, or total addressable market expansion is happening, primarily based on the fact that there are large pockets of spend that are being opened up, given just the fact that there is more money to be spent even if the budget doesn't change, only because you don't have, as you continue to apply this transformation towards as a service, you don't have pre-committed amortizations and spends that hit your balance sheet in a P&L at an operating level. Secondly, I talked about the fact that there are new pockets of spend. Those were traditionally, functions that weren't seen as tech spend areas, but they are now being seen as tech spend areas very, very clearly, especially in the post-COVID world. So I think
I would kind of ask you to think a little bit differently about why visibility of growth is happening. And it's happening because every part of the value chain of every enterprise is getting digitized, and hence there is this tech investing super cycle that's playing out, you know, in the medium term. Could even be longer than, you know, 3 to 5 years, but right now the fact that we have visibility into the next 2-3 years is good enough for us.
Jonathan, thanks. That's it from my side. All the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vaibhav Chechani from BNK Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hello, sir. Congratulations on a very strong set of numbers. Just one little question. Though our logistics transportation and direction, but we have seen, you know, a blip on the margin side on that front. So any color on that, that why the margins have been depleting in those areas?
Yeah, we actually talked about the margins quite extensively in the last few minutes, last 30, 60 minutes. So I think the issue isn't so much, I think what you're looking at is the reported number. I think what I would ask you to look at is the adjusted number purely based on the transaction costs that we talked about. That's one. Two, I think the band that we've given, very tight band, we probably will continue to operate in that band. The guidance for the year is pretty clear as well. So there is nothing to call out beyond that. Of course, this is a headwinded environment from a supply constraint perspective, and that obviously is going to continue to ask us and require us to keep making investment on the supply chain side, and that's probably the reason why you're seeing, you know, you're seeing pressure on that front. But having said that, we also have, I think this is a good environment for pricing, and we have been able to continue to improve our pricing, you know, metrics. So that should mitigate some of the headwinds on supply. And I think the puts and takes will continue to have to be managed pretty proactively to stay in that band that we've talked about.
Thank you so much. Understood.
Thank you. The next question is in the line for Ashwin Mehta from Ambit Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for the opportunity. Just one clarification, most of the other questions have been answered. We saw very smart growth in India, almost 22% sequential. So what's the driver for that and how sustainable is that?
So growth in what, Ashwin? I didn't catch that.
So Nitin, I was talking about there's a 22% growth in India for us in this quarter. So what has been the driver for that and how sustainable are the revenues here? Because India typically is more lumpy.
Manish, where are we seeing the India growth called out separately? I'm confused. Actually, are you seeing the India numbers specifically somewhere in the MD&A? Because I think we are only calling out Americas, India, and rest of the world.
This is in your group overview, MD&A, page 10, with India.
Yeah, the number is fairly, number is fairly small, so I'm trying to...
Yeah, because on an overall basis, this seems to be contributing almost 1% to our overall sequential growth.
I think nothing to call out specifically in that. I don't think this is a lumpy issue for us. I think we have a good set of customers that have been with us for many number of years, and we're basically applying the same motion that we applied to other rest of our clients to that segment as well. So I wouldn't make too much of that, but you know, it's definitely a growth business that we've continued to invest in. And starting to kind of just give us some returns now.
Okay. Fair enough. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Nitin Rakesh for his closing comments.
Thank you, guys. I think we've had a second straight strong quarter in FY22. Operating and client metrics and KPIs are all operating at a higher level than before, explaining our performance. We do believe that, you know, we have the visibility and the tailwinds in the business to continue the performance to continue to carry on for the remainder of the year. And we look forward to talking to you next quarter. Thank you all for your continued interest. Take care and stay safe.
Thank you.
Hello.
Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Mphasis Limited, that concludes this conference call. We thank you for joining
Hello.
Us, and you may now disconnect your lines. If you have any further questions, please write to us at investor.relations@mphasis.com. I repeat, investor.relations@mphasis.com. You can now disconnect your lines. Thank you.